You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey, it's Rob. It was an amazing week of Survivor, and we had incredible podcasts with Christian Hubicki and Steven on the Know-It-Alls. Make sure you catch those as well. Plus, The Circle was back this week with an AI contestant. Taryn, Mike Bloom, and Puya broke down the first week of drops from The Circle and on Renap. Who did Sam Moore find for the big guest? Find out on this week's Rob and Akiva Need a Podcast, all right here on RHAP. We know reality TV.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Australian Survivor. I'm your host, Shannon Gates, here with an important deep dive. We have such a special guest on the line, so please welcome a major game player from Australian Survivor and the show's first ever godmother in the history of the show, the great Janine Ellis. Janine, thank you so much for being here.
There you go, first godmother.
I know, it's crazy. So many godfathers, and took you to be the first one.
So the Americans, I've seen a lot of them. Do they have a lot of godfathers, do they, in the American series?
Yeah, we've had the godfather in Australia, South Africa, America, and I'm fairly certain we've never had a godmother until you.
Oh, there you go. Okay, great.
Well, Janine, thank you so much for taking time out of your extremely, busy schedule to be on the podcast. And I have so many questions about your game, but I do want to start, before you get on the island. You said on the X interview that you're a big fan of the show, but being asked to go on, what's the reaction like that? Surely it's not an immediate decision, with how much you're going to be leaving behind.
Absolutely. When they asked me, the reaction definitely wasn't a, woohoo, yes, that's great. Thank you for calling. But they caught me, Amelia, the producer, caught me at a really interesting time. I had just actually written down my goals for the year, and I was about to catch up with some girlfriends, because we do it every year. And one of the goals was to take myself out of my comfort zone. I wanted to lose a couple of kilos, because it was after summer, so I kept packed on a little bit of weight. I said I wanted to do something that scared me. I wanted to get out more because I'm a bit of a hermit. And so all these things, and so when Amelia called, literally as I was walking out the door, Survivor actually ticked all those boxes. So I was kind of like, oh, okay. And then my daughter, who is a bigger fan than I am, basically said, you're going. And my husband said, we'll make it work. So I kind of had no excuses other than to say yes, considering my motto in life is love life. You've got to live a life. And I think, I tell you what, I certainly knew I was alive playing Survivor.
Yeah, I can't even imagine, how much you would have had to leave with your business behind and your family as well. But, we saw some of it on the show, how much you were doing to prep for the show. What specifically were you doing before you went on the show to prep?
Look, fear is an incredible motivator. And one of the things that, happens when you say yes to Survivor is actually an enormous amount of fear. One of the things I hate is being cold. And so I researched materials that dried really quickly, that kept you warm when wet, that didn't smell. So all the things I need, because you can't have wet weather gear in Survivor, so you have to kind of be as clever as you can within the rules. So I've discovered that merino wool and silk were probably my best options, and so pretty much most of what I wore, I had a silk shirt, I had a silk sarong, and I had merino and everything, merino pants and merino jacket and a bit of lycra in the bathers. But so yeah, for me, that was, I covered that. My fitness, I do yoga, but I needed a bit more cardio, so I started on a high intensity 8-minute every day routine. Even though I swam, I used to swim a lot, I started that again. So I didn't go crazy, but certainly all elements I looked at with preparation. And then I got to the island 24 hours before everyone else, and hired a local villager to help me understand how to do fire, how to open a coconut, how to build a shelter. It's all very well learning fire back in Melbourne, but the reality is you need to have the same materials that I've been given on the island. So he was great. So, I tried to do everything I could, basically based on fear, to make sure I was prepared. And I must admit, when I got on the island, I was shocked at how little preparation other people did. I just was shocked that people kind of went, oh, what you mean that you don't get clothes for 5 days and you don't get anything and I was shocked that people weren't more prepared.
Yeah, were you honest with your tri mates about how much prep you'd done? Because that makes you really helpful, but also really threatening to do all of that.
No, not really. You don't sort of exaggerate. I mean, I learned how to weave, which was kind of handy, so I was teaching people how to weave. I think that the reality is I was on the champions tribe, and so the champions have a fairly decent ego. So you've got leaders in their field. So in actual fact, and that was probably why I felt a little bit more comfortable they wouldn't be threatened by me, because everyone thought they were great. So no one sort of went, oh my God, that's Janine, the businesswoman, because someone said, well, hang on, I'm the Olympian and I'm the sportsman and I'm the, so everyone had their own sort of label. So I think if you're on a different type of tribe, you might have been seen as more of a threat.
Yeah. So you get onto the island, and I know that a lot of the Sporty Seven knew each other just from the athletics world. Had you kind of come across any of these people in your day-to-day life before the show?
No, zero. None of them. I barely recognised anybody. And I knew a couple of them knew each other, as you said, from being in different sporting arenas. But no, I didn't know anybody. It was I started from literally ground zero.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously the tribe has enough athletes to make a majority. What's your reaction to being on this hyper-athletic tribe and your claim to championship is being a businesswoman?
Look, it was interesting. I didn't obviously know about the alliance until it was really too late. Mm. My theory going in was that, deep relationships would have got me deep into the game. And, deep relationships, take a few days to sort of establish and work out who's with what. And so in actual fact, the best thing that the Seven did was actually push the rest of us together. And what they didn't realise was the people that weren't in the sporting alliance were actually the game players. So I had David, I had Luke, I had Pierre, I had me. So we were the four people who actually really understood the game and really played hard and really were excellent at a social game. So in actual fact, it was actually a bit of a mistake of theirs to just look at it. Instead of trying to get the right type of people in your group, they actually just went for, let's label it sporting, come on board, and here we go. Instead, we developed really strong relationships. And what they also didn't realise, or what Steve didn't realise, is that Abby was actually a very close friend of ours from the start. Me and Abby and Pia were actually quite close from the start, and Roscoe and I got along like a house on fire. So, you had two people who were already going, well, hang on, I'd rather hang out with Janine and Pia than, Steve and Nova. And so they expected people to be loyal after 2 seconds. So I think they didn't understand the game, which was great in the end, because it enabled us to, first and foremost, we all the people that weren't in the Seven Alliance knew that we were on the chopping block if they actually succeeded, which actually brought us closer. So, and we trusted each other, which actually enabled us to get close to the game, despite the fact we kept losing and losing and losing all immunity challenges.
Yeah, and I think that's been really apparent in all my interviews, that the six of you with, Ross and Abby and the four of you really just clicked, and that was so much more important than just being an athlete. And then just the comparison of you guys being the game players and being on the bottom and flipping the whole game compared to when you eventually get on the top and the Sporty Seven just did not know how to flip the script at that point. So I think that might speak to some different gamesmanship levels between you guys. But all right, so you make some friends, you've obviously had those positive relationships. Was there anyone you were kind of negatively clashing with in the first couple of days from the tribe?
Yeah, probably the people that I negatively... Actually, I might actually just address your last thing about how they didn't know how to flip it. Mm. You're actually correct. We actually went to Simon and said, mate, you're really like, you're in trouble. Come over, because we thought we could really work with him. But he didn't get it. And that's what was really perplexing for us, because we thought, well, it's not that hard, mate. You just need to... You understand you're now on the bottom. If you came over, you're the last person that we're going to get out when we get to that time. So it was really interesting how they just didn't understand the game. Now, yeah. To your next question, who I didn't get along with, I think the person who, for some reason, I really, obviously, really got up her nose is Nova. But Nova definitely did not like me. Steve was more of a, you know, he was, you know, a bit socially awkward sometimes, but I don't think he disliked me. But Nova, for some reason, I must have done something to annoy her because she certainly wasn't a fan of mine.
Right. I mean, that's going to lead you to be on the wrong side of this first vote, actually voting for Pia, of all people, someone who you're going to form this, like, power alliance with. So how did that first vote come together where you're actually voting against the numbers?
I know. How ironic that the person who I was voting out first was Pia, which actually ends up making us a bit closer. What happened was we were going for Susie. You know, I thought it was a no-brainer. She was by far the weakest person physically, and so I thought it was a really easy one, particularly knowing that they were all a whole bunch of athletes, that that I thought they would just go for the win. So that was really surprised. That's why I realised there was an alliance.
Mm-hmm.
So with Pia, so I just thought it was Susie. It was literally the last minute that Luke came up to me and said, "Janine, we've got no choice. We've got to go with Pia. All the numbers are here." And I didn't have any time at all to then you know, change it. And when you're actually at that point, really, as long as the name's not you for the first one, you kind of go for it. And even though Pierre and I became thick as thieves, at that stage we liked each other, but we hadn't really got that relationship that, you know, I could have gone into bat for her, because at that stage you're just really covering your own butt for the first one. And Anastasia, in actual fact, she seemed to be a closer alliance at that stage than Pia was. So, but I was gutted. As soon as I found out, I tried to sort of do something about twisting it around, but at that point, I just couldn't do anything. So really, I had no choice but to vote for Pia. And then I found out it was actually, you know, that Nova swapped it around to Anastasia, and so it was me, Anastasia, and Luke that actually voted for Pia, which actually was probably one of the best things that happened to me, because it enabled Luke and I to form a really good friendship and a really good alliance. And to be honest, I think Luke is a very good player and he's a very good social player. And so he enabled us to really, you know, when you've got a team of people, divide and conquer, you know, you've got Luke staying with those people, I'm going over here, you know, Pierce going to speak to those persons. So we actually were very, very tactical in achieving our goal. We really went, okay, who do we need to get? Right, okay, here, you work on him, I'll do this, we'll do this. So it was really great to have such good game players that we're all together. And, you know, the Sporting Seven forced it. And Luke did say, and I agree with him, we're a really tight four, like a really super tight four, and a tight four will always be a loose seven.
Yeah, I mean, but what's that initial reaction? You've had to vote for Pierre, who you didn't want to vote for. Then Anastasia, who you're saying you have a close relationship with, is going home. You're on the bottom. You voted incorrectly at the first tribal. How does that feel in that moment?
Oh, you do go. It's a bit of a shock. Because I think what happened was the champions tribe had to play really hard really quickly. The contenders were sitting on the other side just filling their hands, some going, oh, I wonder what we're going to do today.
Mm.
And so we were playing from day one. And so as soon as you start voting, you certainly know who's doing what. And so, yeah, going back to camp, you know, there was people that, you know, EP barely spoke to me. There were people that just didn't even talk to you. And then there was your gang who, you know, so in actual fact, you were closer to your gang. And the others who just didn't play the social game at all just became further and further away, which made it really easy for us to just pick them off as we continued to lose immunity.
Yeah, and I've spoken to Pierre a bit about how, like, it was water off a duck's back that you'd voted for her, and you say it was really positive for your relationship. So how do you consolidate that with Pierre after you voted for her?
We laughed our heads off. So she came up to me and she said to me, "Thank you so much for not voting for me." And I went, "Well, funny you say that." And I said, "No, in actual fact, I did. I told her why and how." And Luke came up and said, "Mate, I voted for you too." And so the three of us got together and we went, "Oh, Stel, we voted for you." And she just laughed and said, "I would have voted for you. The same thing would have happened." And then from then on, we were as tight as tight. And I said, "The only what, the only time I'd write your name down ever again is if you're up for the final two."
Yeah, I think that we see that a lot with you and Pia particularly, but that whole fun alliance really was the fun alliance. There's so much laughing and stuff. Like, it just seemed like a good time. Like, no wonder people wanted to flip to be with that.
Oh, we loved each other, you know. I like, you know, you got Luke, who's a funny. Pierre, I think, is a cack. I mean, actually, funnily enough, I don't know if Pierre mentioned, but even though I came across as a very serious businesswoman, Pierre would describe me as completely goofy, and for a smart woman, does stupid things. So thank God that they edited all my stupid things out. We had, and David's hysterical. So, yeah, we had, and Roscoe, I mean, we really did have the fun. We did have all the funnest people with us. So I was so lucky to have sort of an experience like this with such great people.
Yeah. So we're going to get to episode 3, where you're blamed for the challenge loss with the digging and everything, and you're being targeted. So what do you credit your own game with in, firstly, you know, flipping Abby and Ross over, and also getting the vote off of yourself in that time?
Yeah, okay. So first and foremost, I was appealing to the sportsman's ability to understand what it is to win a game. At this point, what you didn't know to see is that Susie was just by an absolute mile the weakest physical link in the game. She's amazing in the water, but there were no water challenges. And so on the land, she just wasn't very strong. She was definitely the weakest link. And I, at this point, had won every single challenge I actually was involved with. I either won the individual ones or I did really well in those group ones. So it was sort of an easy argument to say, well, if you're playing a grand final, why on earth would you put the weakest team on there? You know, do we want to keep coming back to there? So, but the Seven Alliance, they thought that was so strong that, it was all about actually keeping it strong. So the two people we worked on was Abby, and Abby, as I said, from the word go, was very close to Pierre and I. And the second person we worked on was Roscoe. So Roscoe was very loyal. And so at the well, I said to him, promise me you'll never write my name down. And he said, I promise you I never will. I said, okay, I promise you I never will too. And because Roscoe promised me that, I knew he never would. And I wouldn't have appeased with it as well. So it was actually, I knew I had Roscoe. I wasn't sure because Abby was very much, if I say something, I like to do it. And also she doesn't like to disappoint people. But at the end of the day, she looked over at Nova and Steve and E.T. and Simon and then saw David, Luke, Pierre and I and went, God, who do I want to go further in the game with? And so in actual fact, I was very lucky. But obviously I did my speech, which was really sort of targeting some of the sporting guys, that they're, guys, come over and play this game properly. And clearly, you know, good old Roscoe and Abby flipped over, and you know, I certainly open for that.
Yeah, I mean, after this, you guys are completely on the top. Is there much of a working relationship with the people who've been left out of the vote, or are you just then at that point picking them off?
Just picking them off. Right. We had our people that we wanted to go. Actually, it was pretty clear who we wanted to go in order. We wanted Steve Nova, E.T. and Insana would have been our last pick. So it wasn't even a discussion or a debate. We kind of knew that that's how we wanted to play. Because Simon was just a gorgeous guy and someone we were happy to play with. E.T. wasn't a game player as much, and I didn't really have much to do with him. So for me, he wasn't one. Nova, you know, as I said, wasn't a fan of mine, but I had to feel like, because she was quite strong, personality-wise, if you take her out, you've got to make sure you have a clean shot. You make sure you take the head off completely. So that's why we had to blindside Nova before Steve. You know, for that reason, we wanted to make sure it was a clean cut. Mm-hmm. And then that sounds vicious, but that's fair enough. And then we knew that with Steve would be the needy next target.
Yeah, and another thing that happens in this pre-swap is that you find the contender idol. You're seen by David, and there's this whole swap, which is a very long-term storyline. So he does take, from what I understand, your parchment and gives it to Sean. So you're kind of involved in this, maybe a little bit less than you might like. How did you see this whole plan unfold?
Well, I had the idol, so I had a number of options. I decided the option I wanted to stick with was use it as an insurance policy because I was confident we had the numbers in the alliance, that I thought, well, that's okay, I'll use it as an insurance policy. If I become a contender, then I'll have an idol to be able to protect myself because I may not even know what the numbers are. So I thought it would be absolutely stupid to actually swap it and then find myself as a contender and then go, oh, great, I've got the wrong idol. And then I also agreed with David, once he did actually debate swap, what we said was, let's stand next to each other. I don't know if you noticed this, but we stood next to each other at the tribe merge swap. And if he became a contender, I became a champion, we're going to swap idols. So there were sort of a number of safety mechanisms in place to ensure that David and I were in good stead going forward. So with that, yes, David came up to me and said, well, can I have all your parts? And I'm doing a fake idol. Sean, I found out Sean has it. So let's do this. I said that I would rather play the social game, as in, you know, try and talk to him and see, you know, try and do it as a bit more of a relationship building. But I said, look, if you want to do it, knock yourself out. And then just keep my name out of it so then I can actually play, you know, more of the social game. So, yeah, I was more than happy for him to go and do the fake idol.
Yeah, I mean, were you worried that it might come back on you, or do you feel like he was kind of going to get the brunt of that?
No, I thought David would get the brunt. But, you know, he's a survivor. You know, every move you make has a potential consequence. So, you know, I was hoping I wasn't going to get the brunt of it. Which I didn't end up actually. I actually used it a little bit later for my own benefit.
Yeah. So, you know, as you spoke about, you kind of just pick off the rest of the Sporty Seven. So getting to the swap, did you have any concerns here? As you said, you had a good relationship with Simon, but he had been on the bottom. Were you worried he might flip over and put you in a minority at that point?
Look, the thing with Simon is he actually is a very loyal guy. And I was a bit worried about the Sean factor, and he also knew that we would have the numbers, that we had proven to be so strong that he knew if he stuck with us, he'd get further and further into the game and get to merge. So, because we'd proven to be so strong. So if he then looked at he was already on the wrong lines, I think he felt like, mate, I don't need to change anything, keep it simple, keep it safe, just keep moving. But I was concerned that Simon was going to flip when at merge with Sean, because Sean was, you know, someone he got along well with, and you know, so it was I thought there was a high chance of that, which I think having dinner with him the other night, I think he would have.
Really? Okay. And what are the new relationships, you know, like now that you're forming? There's Sean, Casey, Matt and Harry that you're meeting on this new tribe. Harry's gonna be a big one, but what were those initial reactions and relationships like?
I thought, yeah, basically Harry came up and said Sean is a blab. Sean came up and said Harry is a you know, don't trust him. Apparently Casey talks too much, and yeah, Matt is just a quite good guy. So you know, you sort of made your own assumptions, but you know, at the end of the day, my focus was the fact that we had this really strong alliance. I was so happy to see that I had five in my alliance on the right side. And that, you know, and then for us, it was about protecting our numbers at merge, and that was if we could protect the boys, if we, you know, somehow could, which we, you know, obviously put the we let a challenge go for that reason.
Yeah, and a big thing that's going to happen now is that, you know, Sean, you're going to tell him about the fake idol, and especially now that you're saying basically what a big part you had in David's plan, like this is particularly bold to come to Sean now, and you know, we spoke a bit about it on the X interview, but you know, just run through what you were intending to happen with that.
So I knew that Sean had never had a chance to really talk to David, so I felt confident that he did not part of it. Mm. I told Sean. I said, Sean, I know David has done this because I gave him the parchment, right? So, did I? No, I didn't, because he didn't know that I had an idol. He didn't know I had an idol. Actually, no, I didn't. I just left that part out. The theory of telling Sean was two things. First and foremost, develop closer relationships. Like there's nothing that brings people together more than a common enemy. And the other thing was we wanted David out at some point, and we knew that if Sean hated him, he would be a number for us to get David out. So those were the two reasons that we told Sean about the idol, and both of those worked out beautifully.
Yeah, I mean, you speaking to Pia as well a little bit about it, like she said that you guys really wanted his help at the merge, but he is going to be stolen over to be on the tribe with David and Luke. Before that had happened, how did you feel about David and Luke being on the other side and, you know, being in a really dire situation, especially Luke? Because David, we did see a little bit of, like, you know, negative interactions with before the swap.
Yeah, I think the reality is with Luke is that if anyone can survive, Luke can. I mean, as I said, his social game is off the charts. I mean, I think he spent maybe 1 hour a night. He was working white, yeah, and doing, you know, playing a really hard game. But without people noticing, I think he's a very good player. Actually, I would, if I have another chance, yeah, if I do, or I probably would say no, but who knows. if I did it again and Luke was in there, I would team up with him in a nanosecond because he's a very good teammate. And he real, like the key thing about Survivor, and this is where people get some trouble, is keep your lips together, say nothing, you know, and most people can't help themselves. They have to tell or they have to spill it or that. So really, Luke's the one that could keep his lips together, which you know, made him a great team member.
Yeah, and are you concerned at all about David, or if he gets picked off, are you like, probably for the best?
David, for me, when we went to Merge, was all about being a number. So I knew that he would keep us. I knew he'd vote with us at least for the first two or three, and then after that he was a liability. And Luke was telling us whether it was true or not that David was gunning for it. So really it felt like it was either David would get up.
Yeah, so you go to this tribal council. Was there any, you know, thought from you guys that it wouldn't be a proper tribal council in knowing that the other tribe were going to be there, or did you really think you were going in there to vote?
Oh, no, we thought 100% we're there to vote.
Right.
Yeah, we did. I didn't think, I knew there was twists and turns, but I never actually thought we were going to vote Harry that night. So Harry was going home.
Yeah, right. So was the vote going to be split then? Because I think Harry did already have an idol at that point.
Yeah, it was split with Harry and Casey.
Right.
But Harry, for some reason, thought we were going to vote Sean, so he was going to play it on Sean.
Right. Yeah, I mean, this is a crazy tribal council. Yeah, if I ever get to, I'd love to. But this is a crazy tribal council from Harry, who admits that his child is fake and he's like blowing up his game and he's putting all of the heat on you in front of, you know, everyone, because the other tribe's there as well. I think this is actually where the godmother term originated. How does it feel at that point to have your spot as a threat really blown up by Harry there?
So Harry's theory was, because he had an idol, he wanted either all the votes on him, so he played idol, and then that means he could control who goes home. So he thought that if he was an asshole that night, that we would just go, that's it, he's gone. But, yeah, clearly we're not that stupid. So for him, again, and a good play, you know, take the target off your back, give someone a title, give someone a title of godmother, because last time in Australia someone got the title of godfather, he went home the next day. So when he gave through that at me, I thought, oh, bloody hell, Harry. You know, my game plays head down. And so he wasn't making it very easy for me to put my head down.
Yeah, but Sean is going to be stolen. What are your thoughts about that? Because he's someone you had tried to work with a bit. I love there was a secret scene with him pitching you his business idea, like Shark Tank, which was great to watch. And obviously he's a huge physical factor as well, so, you know, keeping you away from the tribal council. So were you happy to just maintain your majority there, or were you sad to see him go to the other tribe?
Oh, no, I was sad to see him go. I thought actually we could probably continue to work with Sean and develop that relationship to be a number going in, because it's all about, you know, we knew that we weren't going to, we felt confident, well, not new, but we felt confident that we weren't going to lose our numbers, but we did want to go into swap with as many strong numbers as possible. So we just started to work on that relationship with Sean, so I was sad to see him go. And he would have been the last person that we voted out on when we were picking off people. So he would definitely be the last one. So it was sad to see him go. However, I thought the contenders had it for the Bella Champ at this point. Did a terrible decision. In actual fact, they should have taken one of us strong ones, you know, the strong alliance, and then just the next chance just vote us out. So because what all they did was it meant that we were strong going into Merge. It was crazy. Yeah. It was crazy that they didn't try and, you know, reduce our numbers. Because why wouldn't you do it? That was, for me, I just went, because as soon as that came up, I was like, oh, one of us is going, probably me, being popped across and not to pick me off, because that's what I would do. I wouldn't have taken Sean, because Sean's going to be my number when it comes back. But instead they took Sean, and yeah, crazy as it was, they I think it was their demise, because all that meant was I actually didn't mind the fact we kept losing, because I could clean up our camp, and so when we go into Merge, that we've got only champions.
Yeah, I have spoken to a couple of them about that on the exit interviews, because I also, you would think that they would want to, even of the numbers on the contender tribe, take someone like you to the champion tribe just to vote you out, as you say.
Correct. That's what I would have done.
Yeah, but I think it just honestly speaks to how much they liked Sean, were worried for Sean, wanted Sean on their tribe. Like, they were way more worried about Sean than any of the other contenders. Like, I think Daisy was really leading that. And then she doomed, you know, as we'll see, Casey, Matt in another world with fewer idols, Harry as well. And that was a decision that they made. And it did make them go, you know, really down in the numbers at the merge. So, again, I think maybe that speaks to Sean's social game and some of the short-sightedness from some of the other contenders.
Yeah, totally. I mean, that's, I think, the thing is you've got to always think, you've got to think about today, because if you don't think about today, you won't get till tomorrow. But you do have to think about the bigger picture and the numbers going forward, or you just won't get to the end.
Yeah. So, you know, now David and Luke are in a really, really tight spot. Sean's gone back. He knows about the fake idol. It's a bit of a dicey situation. And you, at a point, are going to throw the challenge. Do you feel like this was your idea, or was it kind of like a group decision to come to this?
Well, we didn't decide to throw the challenge because I knew David had an idol. I knew he had that. And I knew that him and I knew him and Luke would have worked out a way to play it. So I wasn't going to throw a challenge until I thought that they were completely at risk. And then once, because every time we get the challenges, you know, we whispered in each other's ears and we gave each other a look. And so he said, I am screwed, I'm in trouble. And I think at that point he really was. And so we actually, all of us collectively, it wasn't actually even just me going, before I think we should do, we all said, look, we really think we should throw the challenge and keep picking off our people because we need to protect these guys going to the numbers. And it's really not that hard to go, hey, guys, let's look at the numbers, let's look at where we are, and if we don't make these moves, we're in serious trouble.
Yeah, I mean, it's not hard for you and for Pia, maybe, but, you know, with an athlete like Simon, with Abby, these are professional sportsmen. Was there pushback, or were they really on board with the idea?
No, look, don't get me wrong. Just because I'm not a professional sports person, I hate losing. Like, I hate it. And so I was just abhorrent at actually throwing a challenge at anyone else. I mean, because I've played netball for 35 years and quite at a high level. So I'm a ridiculously competitive person. So it wasn't an easy thing to do, in actual fact. It was actually very difficult. But I think at the end of the day, it's not about winning. I actually said to them, you know, at the end of the day, it's losing a battle to win a war. And, you know, this is a battle we have to lose to make sure that the end game we get further on and end up being a good decision.
Yeah, so you do throw the challenge, and now this is where Casey goes home. And Casey was really, I think, authentically trying to work with you. She told me in the exit interview she was, like, pretty much done with the contenders. But she was, it seems, running back and forth. So that decision there to split the vote on her with Harry other than someone like a Matt, did you not feel like you wanted to keep Casey, or, like, why was she expendable to you?
Oh, because if someone comes up to you and tells you everything about someone else, you just assume that person goes back to that person and tells them everything about us.
Right.
So you actually can't trust someone who's so prepared to flip so quickly and tells you everything. And also, I can work with really calm people that can speak, that can cite, and that are relatively trustworthy as a canon survivor, as trustworthy as a canon survivor. And so Matt, for me, was a bit more of a steady Eddie than Casey. And Casey, she's a flipper. So even though she might have been my numbers for another couple, I certainly couldn't trust her going too far into the game.
Right. So she goes home. Harry's still in the game, and he had been your primary target for the challenge throw from what we saw on the screen. You get to the next challenge, and from everything I've heard from everyone, is that this challenge isn't being thrown. So at that point, did you feel like you'd bought Dave and Luke enough time, or, like, why did you change course to not throw the remainder of the immunity challenges when Dave and Luke still may have been in trouble and Harry was still there, you know, to be picked off?
For me, it's about protecting numbers, and I knew if we got to the very end that I didn't want to lose Simon. Simon was the bottom of our line, even though we told him he wasn't. Mm-hmm. And I knew if we got to the bottom where it was Simon and, say, Harry, we'd still have to split the vote and it would have been on Simon. And I thought, oh, I don't want to lose any more challenges because at this point I thought I had Harry in my pocket and I had Matt in my pocket. I thought we had a good enough relationship to bring those two over and be potential numbers. So actually at that point I went, even if Luke and David go, I think we've got the numbers now with Harry and Matt. And so that's why I felt comfortable about not throwing any more challenges, because at this point, you know, because every day, every 24 hours, relationships change and conversations change. So I felt confident that I had the numbers with these guys.
Yeah, so that makes a lot of sense. But you do lose the challenge, unfortunately. And yeah, there's going to be, you know, some stuff here. It seemed like there was a bit of an argument, like, should the vote be split or not? And it was split. Was that as kind of amped up as it was on TV, or were you just definitely splitting it from the get-go?
No, we're always splitting it. I mean, if you've got the numbers to split, why would you not split? I mean, you'd be crazy not to always keep these sides.
Yeah, I think the TV product was, it was weird. It was like a lot of, we're not splitting, and then you split the vote, and it's like, well, we didn't see something here. Like, you know, that's when the edit kind of, I think, misleads the audience.
Yeah, correct.
And Maddie and Harry are really trying to work on Simon and Ross, from what we saw, to the point where you are going to play your idol, which I want to ask you about. How concerned were you that they actually were going to flip these numbers in Ross and Simon to come against the girls?
Look, the reality is I trusted Ross, but I thought if anyone could split, Simon could, because he wasn't part of our original line.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, I was never going to play my idol unless Harry had played his, because then that means that we've got less numbers. So even though I ended up not needing to do it, it was I made the decision that I would play it if Harry played his, and if he even had one. So as soon as he had one, and it seemed like that there was a few conversations which I felt uncomfortable with, I thought, why, my idol was the fun after two more votes anyway. So it's either this one or the next one, and other than that, it's not a live idol, it's dead again. So I thought, you know, it's crazy not to play. I didn't want to go home with it, that's for sure.
Yeah, especially as you said, it's expiring. And because of the Medivac, this is going to end up being the last time you could have played it. So, like, better safe than sorry, for sure.
Yeah, correct. Absolutely.
So, as I said, you know, there's not going to be another tribal council because Ross is going to be Medivac. We haven't spoken that much about your relationship with Ross. How did you feel about your relationship with him coming into the merge, but then unfortunately losing him from the game?
Oh, no, Ross and I were very tight. I mean, he was very much, you know, probably next to Pia. He was probably my closest friend in the game. And so it was, I was devastated. I was devastated and really angry about Ross. Because if you hurt yourself as part of the game, that's fine. If you hurt yourself because it broke, that's not cool. And so I was pretty angry. I was devastated that he was gone, he went, actually.
Yeah, and we do see as part of this your plan of working with Harry, and you've mentioned it before, because, and you mentioned it on your blog as well, about having to basically, you wanted to go all in, as you've explained, with either Harry or Simon, and you knew you couldn't do that with Simon because you'd have to put a vote on him if you were voting for Harry, because he just had so many idols, and it's good to assume that he's found another one. So that was an authentic thing, that you were really going in there to vote out Simon and really just hoping that Harry would kind of trust you at that point through the merge?
Correct. That's exactly what we did. And also we thought that Harry, because I didn't know Andy from Barra, so I didn't realise how much people hated Andy until I got back over the other side. But he said, look, I've got Andy, so I thought, okay, well, on the other side, it means that we've got a potential Andy, we've got a potential Harry, we've got a... Like, so the numbers did make sense. It actually, because I knew that if I wrote Simon's name down, I knew Simon would go across to Sean. We just knew it.
Right.
As I would if I was Simon. Because I go, well, I clearly, by us writing his name down, we are saying, just so you know, mate, you are on the bottom. You are so on the bottom.
Yeah, not enough that he's, like, clearly the last remaining Sporting 7 member that you didn't get a chance to pick off at the pre-swap, and now it's, like, even more clear.
Correct. And the other thing is, and look, you know, and that's, and even though, I don't know if we told him he wasn't, we said, you know, you say all the right things, you say that, oh, you know, it's all fresh again, we started again, you're not on the bottom, but, you know, we say all those things, but for us, yeah, it was pretty clear who went where. Well, for me anyway, and I think that one thing I think I did well in the game was to be able to influence. You know, I certainly didn't lead, but I certainly influenced people in certain ways. But which then is probably a type of leadership anyway. So yeah, definitely I could show logic. I could actually explain in my head how we could all get to the end. I could explain that clearly so people understand it and hopefully support me in that.
And now a quick break to hear from our sponsors.
America. We are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. To serve others in ways that promote human flourishing and create a ripple effect of transformation for generations to come. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
And we are back. So you get to the merge, and there's a few new people that you're meeting here, John, Daisy, Andy, and Baden, and it's the 6-6, you know, deadlock, basically.
Correct.
Do you feel like you had much of a say in this kind of Andy vote and the champions getting the numbers, or were you kind of leaving this one to David and Luke, who'd had that negative relationship with Andy?
Completely left to them. Basically, I said to them, I don't know what's been going on your site, no idea. I said, potentially Harry might work with it. And they said, and they turned around, they said, everyone hates Andy. And so they said, it's such an easy vote. So obviously we need to find a way of actually splitting the 6-6. Sean was, rightly so, going, this is crazy, we need to keep the contenders tied. Let's draw rocks. He actually wanted to draw rocks.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, back to probably a smart move. Because as soon as you know, they said, oh, that's all right, we'll get rid of Andy, then next time we'll be a champion, yes, to even it up. As soon as we got the numbers again, we went, nah, bugger that. we're definitely sticking with the champions.
But as you said, based on the 47 and the fun alliance, it's about who you want to work with, and a lot of the contenders just didn't want to work with Andy. Probably why he was such a good bet. He could rally most of the people, other than I think Sean and Harry, to actually want to vote for him at that point, even if it was against the numbers for them.
Correct, exactly. And Daisy couldn't stand him, and I think he'd been voting for Daisy and putting her name down.
Yeah.
So it was, and Daisy was a very emotional and very tight with Sean. So it was, and the only way that he would get away is if Daisy played her idol for him, and that was never going to happen because she couldn't stand him.
Yeah. And how has this frenemy relationship with David evolved to this point? You're now back on the same beach. He is a number for you. You guys have been gunning for him from the get-go. How are you feeling about him at this point?
Oh, look, David is a very hard person to dislike, right? He's a high woo, he's funny, Pierre and I and Abby, we went, right, if we get a clear shot, we're taking David out. But he wasn't hard to be around. He wasn't like someone that you went, oh, God, David. Mm-hmm. And in actual fact, what we loved about David is he knew it was a game and we were playing a game. He was playing bloody hard. And we knew how he thought because we were on his team, you know, earlier days. So all he had to do was go, David thought that because he was, you know, his top model and had this woo, that, you know, us poor women had no chance from his charm. And so we just played that up. We went, yes, David, you're correct. We have, you know, your charm is so amazing. We've got no chance against your charm.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he just believed it, which was great.
Yeah, I loved watching that. Like, I mean, I love David, huge David fan, but like, it was pretty clear, I think, the whole time that you and Pierre especially were like onto him the whole time. Like, everything he did, you guys caught onto or knew about throughout the entire game. So I never felt like he was going to be getting one over on you.
No, it was great. And the thing is, and as I said, quite often when you actually believe your own BS, it's so easy to play against it. And I've come across, you know, all sorts of people in my time, and you can kind of put them in categories. And so with him, you know, it was fairly easy to make him feel comfortable.
Yeah, I mean, David's going to win immunity here at that drowning challenge. Would you have gone for him this early if he hadn't won immunity, or was it going to be another contender first before you took the shot?
No, it was always, before I took a shot, it was always when we had the numbers. So in actual fact, for me, two contenders had to go before David, because that means we still got the majority. I mean, that would be crazy for them to take a big contender and we get a champion and we're back to where we were before that merge.
Mm.
So no, it was always, oh, we'd only take David out when we had the numbers, enough numbers.
Yeah, and Sean even said in his ex interview with me that he feels like if he had really been able to bond with you more or spend more time with you in the pre-swap, because you were running the game so much at that point, he feels like that could have saved him. But you here, we're gonna see it at that live tribal council after all these rings of fire, and you were the one who put your foot down, kind of, that it had to be Sean. You know, we can talk about Sean versus Luke for sure, but other than Sean, was there a thought for you there could be another contender, maybe someone you didn't know as well, like a Daisy, to keep someone like Sean who wanted to work with you in the game, or was he just too big a threat at that point?
No, that biggest threat, what you found with Sean is unless he was with me, he wasn't with me. And so we didn't have enough time to develop a relationship strong enough to, for me to trust him or he to trust me. And so because of that, then as soon as you have a free shot with Sean, you've got to take it. You just have to. And so the other thing is with that whole scenario with voting Luke out over Sean, so Luke had been with me, he saved me, right? And he was part of the people that saved me on day three. He was someone who'd been with me the whole time. So to vote out a Luke over a Sean who would turn on me like a dime was just stupidity. And not only that, we had a top four, which was Abby, me, Pierre and Simon, and we're going to go to a bottom three, which is me, Pierre and Simon, because Abby didn't even know about the plan. So yeah. Once we actually did the cutoff and they said, right, we're done, I was going, this is just stupidity on an extreme. And that's why at Tribal Council I had to give my speech and luckily I converted the people, you know, back to Sean, not to Luke, because it was seriously stupidity that would vote Luke out at that point.
Yeah, I mean, I do think it was kind of funny with those rings of fire, how plans were often made just by it seen by who was standing with each other. As you said, Abby, one of your closest allies, wasn't in the big plan. Luke even said on the deep dive at a point, it was just him and David, and they were like, wait, this is of no help to us. Like, it was very much just who happened to be in the vicinity of each other, which I don't think makes for a good long-term alliance somehow.
No, it doesn't. And it was like that. It was crazy. It really was crazy. And good on the Survivor Gods for putting it in there, because it was... the way they did it. So as I said, well done, and I should do it again because it really did create chaos.
Yeah, and I'm interested in your relationship with Luke, who you're about to blindside when you vote out David, but we see these amazing scenes between the two of you and how you kind of connect, maybe even coming from very different lives back home, and you have just saved him there. Was it a very tight relationship with you and Luke there, even though obviously you'd both probably be seeing each other as threats at that point?
I don't think neither of us saw each other as a threat. I think Luke, to be honest, Luke is probably the only person in the game that I thought that I didn't have a chance against in Final Two.
Right.
So, and even then I thought that I could, you know, I felt like I could beat nearly everyone with, you know, some of the games and moves I made. But Luke would have been the hardest one to beat out of everyone. So I didn't have a problem with taking Luke all the way to the end. Everyone else did, but I never did. So, and Luke found out later that probably I was one of the most loyal people who possibly could have taken through. So, you know, you make your decisions. It was great. And you say that we're different, and maybe in the outside world, you know, you think we are, but our backgrounds are very similar. Like, I was brought up in Boronia, which is the eastern suburbs of Melbourne, which is kind of, it was fairly rough. Like, it wasn't, you know, there wasn't knives in the streets, but it was certainly the, you know, lower socioeconomic area. And same with Luke. So we probably got brought up with very, very similar. So we had probably a lot in common. And to be honest, when you're on the island, actually, it doesn't matter if you work in the mines, you're a CEO, it doesn't matter if you're a Olympian or a footballer, you're actually just people. And I think that that's what's awesome about that is that no one goes, oh, I'm now talking to Janine, the businesswoman, I'm just talking to Janine. And that's what the, you know, real special part of Survivor is.
Yeah, do you feel like that extreme life experience and your whole journey and kind of, you know, all the different stages of life that you've seen was very helpful to you on the show and helped you connect with, you know, a multitude of people?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, people are that sometimes people are good with people and some people aren't. I mean, in the real world or in Survivor. And, you know, someone like Pierre and me and Luke, I think we were fairly good and could relate to everyone at all levels. So, no, it was fun. I think it was an advantage.
Yeah. So we're going to get to the David boot. We saw a lot of this from Pia on the show, which makes a lot of sense because she wins the game and it's a big move that she credits, you know, at Final Tribal Council as well. What do you feel your role was in this move?
The David move started at the cafe. So the David move started at the cafe. Then it moved to telling Sean about the fake idols. So they were all David moves. Then you didn't actually see it at the cafe. That was when Abby, me and Pia found out David was lying to the three of us and telling us all different stories. And so that wasn't shown on the TV. So that was when we went, oh, right, okay, we need to get him out. And so when we actually won on the island, David was never going to be a move until we had the numbers to be able to get rid of him and still have strong numbers. So as soon as we had that, and as soon as he didn't win the individual immunity, we went, okay, it's time for David. And so we were going, okay, the only way to get David out is to make sure we have a very small group of people to actually get him out. But the reality was, what we found was that the others, the contenders were all going, let's get David too. So everyone collectively went, let's get David. So then for me, I went, okay, well, we're in trouble here, because if everyone knows it's David bar David, then someone's going to talk. Someone's going to tell him. And so that was probably the scary thing about the that tribal council, is that I thought, God, if even one person gave David a sniff of what's going on, then we were in trouble. But then again, we had a backup, which was Harry. So again, Harry missed another bloody another shot at him.
That cockroach moniker ended up being like completely prophetic. Like throughout the entire game, I mean, he made it to the final three. It was so accurate.
Oh, I know, outrageous.
Yeah, and I was really actually very impressed at the David boot, that everyone did know and didn't turn, and that the contenders could have turned, but they chose not to. What do you credit that to? Was that something that you guys were doing to making them feel really part of the plan, or do you think they were just so laser focused on David that they didn't turn around and say, well, everyone wants David, let's use the numbers and the fact that they're turning against each other to try and take out like a Janine, for example?
Yeah, they could have, and particularly if David found out, they could have got into people's ear. But I don't know if I was seen as that much of a threat.
Right.
I mean, as you said, there's quite a lot of them who hadn't even met me. And so, you know, I'm this, you know, 53-year-old woman. People could look at me and go, that's all right, we can beat her in the challenges. Yeah, so, yeah, there was a lot bigger threat than me to get through before me. Well, that's what I thought anyway.
Were you very conscious of that threat level? Because we see, like, the car reward, for example, you stay in pretty long, you're about to win an immunity. I mean, you're winning challenges. You can say as much as you want that you're not a threat, but you're really hanging in there, especially with these endurance challenges. Did you not think that was really rising your threat level?
No, so I still thought that the ego of the bloke who see muscles on their arms just had in their head they were stronger than me. Now, again, that was just my thoughts. I mean, they might have had a different... I mean, I must admit, Sean did come to me once and said, my God, you've got this one nailed. And I thought, really, you think that? And you're a big athlete and I'm just Janine? Really? So maybe I'm delusional, but I just assumed that they saw, you know, Abby, for example, as a stronger threat than me. And Abby, so I just thought, Abby will be a target before me. Luke will be a target before me. So I thought there'd be more targets, physical targets before me.
Yeah, and another thing with this David boat is that you're going to leave it after he goes home with four contenders, four champions, and Luke in the middle. Did you have much concern as someone who was working very closely with Luke that he would turn on you guys as a swing vote, or did you feel very much like you could very much bring him back into the fold after that?
No, I thought we could bring him back to the fold because he had... I think there was something he did but didn't tell me as well. So I think because we understood the game and he understood that we said that we couldn't have told you, I think he still felt comfortable.
Yeah. So that's, you know, a huge move that you guys have pulled off. And now, you know, there's a lot of drama at the Daisy vote and the John vote, sorry, when Daisy finds the idol and you guys are having to basically take a shot at the right person so it doesn't bounce back on you. How did that come together where John becomes the target?
Well, John was never the target. It was definitely Daisy or Harry. But then
Harry
Daisy
again slips through. Just insane.
I know. Seriously, I know. So it was Daisy or Harry, and Daisy had the idol, so we knew she had it. We thought, because Daisy was quite paranoid that she played against herself, but we thought that she had to play it for one of them, and the most likely person we believe that she'd play it for is John, because it was always Harry, her, Harry, her, Harry, her. So... We knew that it was the most likely person was John. So if she was going to pick someone, she would have picked Harry or herself. But then we just needed to make her a little bit paranoid. So again, if she didn't have an idol, we would have taken Harry in.
Yeah, I mean, what were you doing? Because you even say when she plays her idol, like, good girl, that, you know, she did the safe move, probably the wrong move. What do you think that you were doing in order to make her so paranoid that she would play it on herself?
Obviously on camp we were sort of saying, oh, this could happen. But also even on the tribal, you know, we said, you know, she can play herself, but really it's about being alive. That gets you through. It's just continuing to be alive in the game. And so just trying to plant seeds and seeds of doubt, really. And obviously the tribal goes a lot longer in real life than it does on TV. So, yeah, there was quite a few seeds of doubt that were throwing good old Daisy's way.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a point where I would say that you and Pia really did have so much power in the game. You've just taken out David. You have the tribal numbers as well, and you're really running the show. At this point, what is your long-term plan? Who are you looking especially to really go to that final three and four with and even sit next to at final tribal council?
Ideally, I would have sat next to Pia in a second. My final three was the three girls, Abby, Pia, and I. The fourth was either Roscoe, but obviously Roscoe wasn't there at that point. I would have liked it to be the final four with Luke, to be honest. I thought the three girls would probably, he wouldn't get to final three, I thought, unless he won immunity. I thought potentially Luke would take me as to the final two, potentially. I was certainly pitching that. Or the other final four would have been, yeah, potentially Harry. We didn't think he'd, because even though Harry talked
Harry
to the game. No, I know. I didn't think he talked a big. He talked a big game, but he actually never played much of the game because. And this isn't saying he's not a game player. Is that he actually never had a chance? He was always in the minority in the numbers, so he actually really voted, as he said, for survival. And so even though he pretended he played this big game, and maybe he did near the end, he definitely did near the end. But for 90% of the game, he was just a passenger. So I thought that he would be a good one to go to final two with. I didn't think that he could own much of the game.
Yeah, and you spoke a bit in the X interview about how you were planning on, you know, taking the money off the table, it's going to charity, you know, vote for me on my game. You spent some time with the jurors in and out of Jury Villa, you know, off the island completely. Do you feel like that would have been effective? Has there been any conversation around that, or have you not really spoken to people about it?
No, we haven't spoken about it. But then, you know, you've got to think of the psyche of people. You go, everyone on that jury believes they should have been the final two, right? So every single one of them thought they, and it happens every year. Everyone in the jury thinks that they're a better player than the final two, right? And so by giving them an option to go, look, you can choose your own charity and we'll collectively give this money to do good, then they feel like I believe that they would feel like they were the winners and that they would go, actually, you're right, I'm going to actually, you know, vote for Janine. Plus, I also thought that I could talk a good game. I actually think that nearly everyone did moves that was collective with people. I could hang my hat on 100% that Sean was 100% me. The reason he went home, if you could ask Sean that, was because of me. And the rest of them was, you know, sure, you know, I might have came up with the idea of David or someone else, but, you know, it was execution to get him out with the collective team. So I don't think many people could put their hand on the heart and say, this is the one person that I got out that actually made a difference in the game. And so I think that that would have got me across the line, and then as well as taking the money off the table, as well as allowing them to choose a charity. I think that potentially made for a very strong argument.
Yeah. Well, I mean, unfortunately, it's not to be, and I want to get to the day that's kind of been like mass described, definitely by you and some of the others, as the day everything changed, where you win with Simon that extremely cool challenge, that, you know, peg challenge, and the spa reward, and you take Daisy and Pia, and the decision in that, and what we've kind of heard of, you know, the people left behind ended up really forming something that was going to kind of break the whole game apart. So looking back on it now, how do you sit with that decision in that day?
Oh, look, you know, if I wasn't going to win, Pia winning is a good thing, right? So I'm happy with the outcome. So, and as I said, Pia, we often sort of talk about what if we could have done this and that. And I keep saying to her, there's nothing you can do differently because the game was perfect for you because you won. So as far as Pia's concerned, this game was a perfect Pia game. As far as I'm concerned, we always said, Pia and I always said that if we ever got to a challenge, we wouldn't take each other. We need someone on camp. But the reality was that Pia hadn't eaten for 22 days. Like, she was starving. And yes, there's the emotional game, and yes, it's a game and all that sort of stuff, but they're real emotions, they're real, you know, there's a real love that I have for her. And also I thought, well, she's also with a team of Daisy, and potentially I thought we could might actually be able to convert Daisy to come over across with us, and then there's another number, and you justify it all the way you like, but I must admit, Pia was a stronger person to leave on camp than Thane Abbey, which clearly ended up being the case.
Yeah, and there's a lot going on at the Spa Award, though. You know, Daisy has been telling Luke that a champion told her that he had told people about the idol. I think I'm finally getting that right after a few deep dives. It's a very back and forth conversation. So there's drama with that. maybe a little bit of distrust between particularly Pia and Luke, and Simon even wanting to flip on Luke. And, you know, they come to you with that because you're the godmother, right? And you're kind of, you know, have a lot of strategic say. So did you want to take out Luke at that point? And then you just didn't have the numbers, say, with Abby to do it? Or were you not thinking of Luke at that point?
No, for me, it was always, look, I must admit, whether I had a boring game or not that anyone would call my game boring, but, you know, in some respects, it was a very predictable game. For me, I was like going, let's keep to the peak. For me, the only one you can trust is someone who's actually written the name that they said they're going to do on the parchment. They're the only people you can trust. And so that was my theory on trust. So the people, so Daisy, I found she was flippy. She could, you know, was here, there, everywhere with her head. So I knew I could maybe trust her for one vote, but after that, it could be anybody's vote. So for me, it was really important that I trusted Luke, I trusted Abby, I trusted Pia, and obviously I trusted myself. So for me, I kept going back to what do I know? And I know that in the past, they have voted the way that they're going to vote. That's all I knew, and that's all I could vote on. So for me, I would have definitely protected Luke.
Right. But you also, at this point, win immunity. And I love this so much, but for so many reasons. The fact that you win and the fact that Simon, a professional athlete, is like, look, I'll step down as long as you take me on the next reward, because that's how much I, as a professional athlete, think that you, you know, have the chance to win a reward and take me on it. So I think it was just so impressive. What's that feeling like off the Survivor bucket list, I'm sure, of actually winning immunity?
Oh, it was great. I mean, you've got your bucket list, your Survivor bucket list, you know, find an idol pick. Mm-hmm. I was a contender, I was champion, I found an idol, I won a necklace. I mean, I really had a full game, which was, you know, very exciting. The only thing I didn't get was, you know, top three and top two. But look, other than that, I've got no complaints. It was just gold. I mean, to have that necklace, first and foremost, at that stage, to be able to go to tribal and feel completely safe was just fantastic. And I don't even know if I was in danger or not, if you'd watched the show, I was in terrible danger. But no, so it was gold to be able to go, to one, win it, and two, to go to tribal feeling safe.
Yeah, so, you know, Daisy's going to go home, and you've spoken about how she was a little wishy-washy to work with, but you find out she's actually going to go to exile, not home. So this is a new twist. What was your reaction to that?
I was okay with that. For me, so it was logical that there's two contenders that would go to exile if we had the control, because if you send a champion there and the champion comes back, then they're going to be pissed off and they might actually then flip on it. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was really important that two contenders went off, because if the contender came back, that's all right, they're still in the minority, it doesn't matter. So it was a fairly logical decision to make. What I didn't know was that at this point, though, people go a bit crazy after Merge, and everyone wanted to make big moves, where I was going, stick to the plan, keep, you know, just be calm. But no one was calm at this point. Everyone wanted to go, let's get Luke, let's get someone. And Simon was also, who hadn't really played the whole game, suddenly wanted to make these big moves, and he wanted to get Abby out, and Abby found out about it, and consequently, you know, they targeted Simon. So people do go crazy after Merge.
Yeah, I mean, this is a point where Simon, Abby, and Luke all technically flip on you and Pia. Was there any suspicions there from you that something was amiss, or were you blindsided at this point about what they were all doing?
No, we're blindsided. Yeah, so I had no idea. I thought, you know, I play this game going, as long as it's in their best interest and it's in my best interest, people will vote a certain way. You know, I just think that's quite a logical way of thinking. And so for them to then turn around and go, I know that's because whenever, if you do anything other than that, it's not in your best interest. So consequently, for Abby to flip like that, when we were Abby, I've spoken to her later, it was so crazy. We got down to the final seven with a solid three vote. In actual fact, if anyone was going to do anything with it, other than us three, was to break up our three. That's what they should have done. Because I don't know anyone in Survivor that gets that deep into the game with a really solid three vote. And, so for Abby to then go off with Luke and become a two was just crazy. But then Luke told her that we're going to take him to his final three. So, you know, there's lies being thrown everywhere. So that's what seems to happen.
Yeah, in Simon's defense, he really was trying to break up the Charlie's Angels, you know. So, you know, as you said, it probably makes a lot of sense with how threatening you guys were.
Completely.
And hindsight's 2020, but looking back on preventing some of these flips, either Simon or Abby and Luke you know, was, do you think there's anything you could have done?
I could have got back to that. I could have told made Abby see sex. I didn't know how far she'd gone. If I knew how far she'd gone, I would have definitely worked hard on Abby to make it, to show her sex. And also to tell her, that just regenerate. Because if her relationship was strong, it was just, obviously at this point, everyone's going a bit crazy. So, we'll probably spend more time with Abby.
Yeah. I mean, we spoke on the exit interview about the conversations we didn't see on the show after that vote about, you know, conversations we couldn't possibly have seen because Abby was explaining how Simon was coming for her, but that wasn't a vote that we saw. So I understand that the show had to hide it from us. And then you're going to the exile duel, obviously, not in a great way. Who are you wanting to come back? Simon, who just flipped on Abby and you in a way, or Daisy?
In the end, I actually wanted Daisy to come back.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that because even though that she was voted out, we actually started to develop quite a good little relationship coming out of the cafe, not the cafe, the spa. And so, yeah, we Abby, Pierre and I certainly thought that we could actually bring her in because at this point Abby had got turned, so we went with another three and we thought we could have actually worked on Daisy to be our new three.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously Daisy unfortunately does lose the duel. Simon comes back and we do see you guys trying to work with Harry, you know, this on and off relationship that you've had the whole time. Was there much of an argument to be had there? Did you feel like you were kind of getting to him or was he so far gone at that point with his four that it wasn't happening?
Harry was really interesting. I would come up to him with particular strategies and then he would never give me back. So he was a very difficult person to work with. I don't know whether he was just sort of not interested but he'd say the right things. But he was an interesting one. As I said, I think he was, for me, I thought Harry was a bigger talker than player. But that was just my view. I mean, I wasn't in his head and I wasn't part of other conversations, but certainly that's what I thought. Even though, you know, love the guy, blah, blah, blah. As I said, I don't think he actually had that much of an opportunity to play.
So it's not going to happen with Harry, unfortunately. And then you are all having to unanimously vote out Simon. How are you feeling at this point? You know, everyone's kind of flipped. Simon's gone home twice. Andy flipped on you. I mean, this is the first real time, I think, since really the early days of the game where I feel like you've lost a lot of power. So what's the feeling like in the game at that point?
Yeah, look, it was hard because, you know, but the thing is, the conversations, I still felt that Abby and Luke were still with us. I thought there was a strong chance that they were going pear-shaped. But at this point, yeah, all the conversations are saying the right thing. And then I also thought, you've got three pairs of two.
Mm-hmm.
So in actual fact, we thought that we had a backup with Baden and Harry, because again, you use the Luke factor. You know, you don't want to go to the end with Luke, you know, we have to get rid of, you know. So it was, in actual fact, if Luke hadn't won immunity, I do believe that we would have gone me, Pierre, Harry, Baden, and taken out Luke and Abby.
Yeah.
But because he won it, it then went, okay, who's the next big player that they want to get out, and that being me.
Yeah, I also think that, you know, it would make sense that was a pretty genuine from them that they wanted to take Luke out, but he did win immunity there. When he wins, and, you know, it's this weird cyclical thing with that vote, because as you said, three pairs and everyone's a swing vote at a point, and it goes from kind of Harry and Baden working with you to Luke and Abby holding all the cards because Luke has won immunity. So they've been saying all the right things. How high is your trust level there that they're actually going to follow through on that with you?
As high as it can be in Survivor, you know, I know that Luke was wavering and I actually had that conversation with him because I know you live with people a long time, you can read their faces. Both Pierre and I said we're in serious trouble tonight. We knew that we're in trouble. So it was just a matter of, trying to have the right conversations, doing everything you can to make sure you get people on side. And, you know, for me, I never panicked. I always felt like I could put my hand on my heart and said, have I done everything I can? The answer was yes, and then, you know, everything will be, because I only had the right conversation.
Yeah, I mean, you played a huge game, you're going to get voted out here, but as you said, you ticked a lot off the bucket list. What's that initial emotion like, getting voted out of the game, but knowing that you did so well and got so close to the end?
Oh, look, it's always a mixed emotion. In one respect, you go, oh, my God, thank God I don't have to go sleep on the beach, right? There is part of your brain says that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then it rained and then you went, oh, thank God, I'm on the beach. You know, so there is part of that. So, you know, you're there that far. You want to get to the whole, the end. But so there's sort of, in some respects, there's relief. There's also disappointment. So there's all of these massive mixed emotions that come into play when you get voted out in the end.
Yeah, and you're going to go to Jury Villa. I'd love to get, you know, your take on the sentiment of Jury Villa. So who do you think was leading the pack at this point? You're at the final five. Who's very much like leading the pack of who the jury wants to vote for and who's at the end of who people wanted to vote for?
Oh, look, everyone, you know, and this was unanimous. Everyone would have voted for Luke for sure because he genuinely played the best game out of the five. You know, because he had all the things against him. So, you know, absolutely he was someone that everyone wanted to vote for. And but we all knew that that's why they had to get rid of him.
Hmm. What about someone like Abby? Were there people that she could have beaten in the game?
I think Pierre would have beaten Abby. I think Abby would have beaten Baden. Abby potentially could have beaten Harry. So yeah, there's definitely people in the game that Abby could have beaten.
Yeah. I'm now asking you the rapid fire jury questions. Pierre versus Luke, who are you voting for in that situation?
Yeah.
You're voting for, but you think Luke would have won?
Yes.
Hmm. What about Harry versus Pia? Who do you think would have won in that matchup?
Pia, for sure.
Okay. Interesting. Luke said Harry, so that actually might have been a really contentious jury jury matchup. And you're getting to reconnect with everyone as well on Jury Villa. We see the David Smoothie, I think it was called, at Jury Villa. You're going to be adding that to the menu.
Yeah, career killer. Yeah, exactly.
Brilliant. Love that. You're on the jury to watch the 2-1-1 vote at the final five. So you're seeing all these big moments from the jury bench and, as you will as well, Luke going home. What are your opinions of these huge moments as you're watching them as a jury member?
Oh, well, it's difficult because you're only hearing them secondhand, you're not seeing them. So it's really hard to sort of get a full gauge of the impact of what's been happening on the game when you might be understanding your question.
Yeah, especially when, you know, that it's such a confusing travel council, like that final five, a lot of whispering. It must have been, like, hard to follow as it was for us at home because it was just such a, you know, secret and crazy travel council.
Yeah, correct. And so you ask as a spectator. I mean, you don't know what's going on. And so it is sort of really, sometimes we don't even know who's going to get voted out. And, you know, there was a couple of times I thought, that, yeah, Pierre was for sure going and she wasn't, and then I thought Harry was and he wasn't. So it is a moment, yeah, when you're on the jury, you're as much of a spectator as someone watching TV.
Yeah, but you're obviously stumping for Pierre at the final tribal council. Were you doing much at Jury Villa as well to advocate for her in your days there?
Oh, yeah, of course you do. You know, without doing it, obviously, you're trying to find out what people's theory is and what their thoughts are. And you know, I wanted them to know because, yeah, people, I was the only person that in the whole game that really saw Pierre's full game. Everyone else sort of saw a bit of it. So it was, you know, good for them to, you know, I sort of helped them understand her game a little bit better. I think I've got a good way of simplifying things and articulating. Obviously, what I said, what you saw on TV, I said a lot more about Pierre's game, which I think very much influenced final decision.
Yeah, I think that you were like really advocating at that final tribal council and you were probably the most impactful jury member, you know, with the wolf in goods clothing and everything like that. So you went in there really with those talking points really to help Pierre in that regard?
Correct. Yeah, correct. So next episode, Pierre started off a bit wobbly and then Baden started off quite strong. And then, yeah, so absolutely Pierre sort of came on strong. I think once I gave her some of the points that I thought she could have used, she sort of really sort of dragged on that. But I think she did a great job.
Yeah, and obviously you watch her win, you know, live there at the time, no reunion. So your partner in crime, the smiling assassin and the godmother, what's it like to see her win there in that moment at the time?
Oh, I was obviously wrapped. I mean, as I said, if I wasn't going to win, I wanted her to win. So, and, you know, it's also your objective. So I went into that tribal, that final jury with my one objective is her to win. So in actual fact, for that to be the outcome that happened, then for me, I'm going, yes, that is, I achieved another goal.
Mm-hmm.
But no, so look, I was absolutely over the moon. You know, people think that just because it's a famous actress, she's absolutely loaded. She's actually, like a lot of actresses, you know, she's just like anyone else in this living. And, you know, that money was massive for her, and I knew that. So, you know, I was really, really pumped that she won.
Yeah. Well, you know, you get off the island, come back here and, you know, I want to talk about some stuff post-game. Mainly, like, what is it like being on Survivor but being Janine Ellis? You know, you're a super successful person. You have these big meetings every day. You know, I don't really know what it's like to be a business person. I assume there's a lot of meetings. But, like, you know, you're also on Survivor on TV 3 nights a week. Like, how did that affect your day-to-day life?
Once I was watching it.
Yeah.
Look, it was actually fun. You know, I had a whole bunch of girlfriends that would come over and watch it. It absolutely was just such fun sharing it with friends. So, it was a great experience. And like, you know, what I loved about it is I was just like everyone else, seeing it for the first time. So when I played Survivor, I only saw my storyline because I was living my storyline. So to really see everyone else, what they saw, what they did, was actually quite extraordinary. I actually loved it. I love watching it. And you got to not take, you know, I think they positioned me as a little bit more serious than I am, but that's okay. They're creating characters. And given it, mate, I'd much rather in anything be a character than just a nothing.
Yeah, I mean, what was the reaction like from other than from business associates and contacts? Did they really love that you did this, or were there a few, like, raised eyebrows? Because some people don't know how, you know, Survivor's a mental game. It's not reality TV. Like, it's, you know, mental, you know, it's chess. It's a sport. But not everyone knows that. So did you get a couple of weird reactions, or everyone was on board?
Well, probably, yeah. I'm sure there's people that thought all sorts of things, but no one actually came to me and said, what are you doing? I think the people in my world of sporting, of business, they definitely, as a Survivor fan, they were like absolutely chucked. We're doing an acquisition at the moment. And one of the senior partners was going, look, forget about the acquisition, let's just talk Survivor. So, you know, if you're a fan, you're a fan. So that was, I think it was everyone I've come across in a massive positive.
Was that a bit of a concern that you had before at all? Because obviously you don't know how it's going to go, and it's great that it was positive. Was that something before you went on that you contended with, or you thought that it would go well?
Not really. You get to a stage when you get a bit older, you care less what people think. You know, I was going for the experience, and if people thought certain things would be well, so be it. And I also thought that I think that if being on Survivor for, you know, 23 episodes, you're going to show who fundamentally the person you are. And, you know, I think that they showed my serious side, but, you know, pretty much what you saw is who I am. So, but with a bit more goofy and a bit more mistakes thrown in. So, no, I think it was, I had no issue with how I was portrayed. I mean, I wish they didn't edit the fact that I said business every second word, but that was fine.
You said the same thing about acting, how they wouldn't get those talking points out of you.
I know, seriously. And the thing is, though, because I never talk like that. And but when you're in your IVs and they say, so Janine, ask a question, answer it. And they say, well, as a businesswoman, how can you relate to it? It's like, well, I suppose in business you do this. So then they go, ha-ha, we have that now.
Oh, yeah, that's how they'll get you. But I have to say, I loved the Boost promotions. I love integrated marketing on Survivor. That's a weird thing about me. And the best one, I think, when you gave everyone cheaper Boost except for the people who voted you out of the game, those four people, that was inspired. I think that was absolutely brilliant.
I know, that was funny. I actually didn't come up with it, but I loved it when they did it. And so the thing is, though, you can't take life too seriously, you know. And, you know, Luke thought it was the funniest thing he's ever saw. And then obviously, as you know, we did a Luke day, so anyone voted called Luke got a free smoothie. So, but, you know, it's just what you need to have. You know, you can't take life too seriously. As I said, I'm probably more goofy than they showed me, because I actually do love a laugh.
Yeah, also goodbye, Stephen Bradbury. You know, I'm going to say on this podcast, we did spend a bit of time trying to come up with Boost puns with the contestants' names. And I think if you will allow me at some point, I will send you a full list. I will come up with a pun for every person if I have to, because I thought that was brilliant.
Awesome. Perfect.
Well, we got some amazing questions from the listeners. I just put this up a couple of hours ago because we changed the scheduled interview, and we got so many great last-minute questions, Janine. So I'd love to ask a couple of questions from the listeners. Ma Boboa says, can you give us some insight into Purple Simon? What was it like strategizing him? Was he really that passive player? Because as I said, we saw so little of him, but you worked so closely with him. So what was it like to work with Simon?
Simon's a lovely, lovely man. I mean, he's someone that, you know, take less food so you can have more food. He would, you know, give you his jacket off his back. So he's, as a person, you can't get a better person than Simon Black. And love him. As a player, he's probably a bit more passive, in fairness. He tries to play harder later, But certainly near the earlier stage, he was very much, and even in the 40 Alliance, I had a few chats to him, and he agreed that, Susie was a better option, but it still didn't make any move. So I think he was, but then again, that's being a passive player is still a play, It's he got a lot further in the game than a lot of people, so I think he did a good job.
Yeah. Arjun Kishore asked, would you have still campaigned as hard for Pia on the jury if she had betrayed you at some point, or would she also not get free booze juice?
Look, I think that, if Pia betrayed me, she would have told me. I think I would have been shocked if she hadn't. We talked about final, she actually said to me, it was between me and Baden, the final two, she would have taken Baden, mm-hmm. and she would have told me, and I actually believe her. You've got to remember, we literally slept in each other's arms every night for, 44 days. So,
the greatest love story of all time, I think she said.
It is the greatest love story of all time. It continues today. I think definitely we would have been, if we did betray each other, we would have been honest in that betrayal.
Yeah. Teresa Beard Johnson asked, would you play again?
Do you know what? I remember Pia and I sitting on the beach. We looked over at Luke and said, oh my God, Luke's an idiot. How could he possibly come here twice? Why would you put yourself through this? And at the time we looked at each other and said, we will never do this again. This is just ridiculous. This is after maybe no sleep, wet through, cold, miserable. And then childbirth, the experience, the thought of the experience, fades into the distance, and you think about all the good things. The reality is I probably would play again. I know people sort of go, oh, you're a businessman, why would you bother? But I love the game. The game's great. And I love the people. I love the experience. I love roughing it. I love finding out what I'm made of. I love the relationships I've got, and I love my friendships that I've got out of it. So there's a lot to love. There's a lot, there's a long list I can give you of things I hated about it. But I think overall, I've left the game with very fond memories.
Yeah, and last question, Tommy Guam asks, did being on Survivor have any influence or change the way you run your business and everyday life for that matter?
Not every day, not business, I don't think at all. I think business is something a little bit different. But I think with life, I'm hoping that I'm on the iPhone a lot less. I hope I'm more present with my family. What it does teach you is gratefulness. Gratefulness for I went to a really dodgy motel the other day, and old Janine would have gone, oh, the pillows are crap and the bedding's terrible and the sheets are this and da 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 da. New Janine went, oh my God, the least part in the dirt. So it definitely gives you an appreciation of life and of things. So I think everyone should go and starve themselves on a desert island for a little while just so they whinge about less things.
Oh my God, I'm not going to take up that offer, I think. I think I'll just try and whinge a little less and not have to sleep in the dirt for 40-something days. That's what I want.
Yeah, I know there is that option too. But I think that also, I think people think it's bad, and I thought it was bad too. But humans just get on with it. I think that there was, all of us were there and we're all suffering the same fate. And there was no whinges. There was no complainers. Everyone just kind of got on with it, which I really enjoyed.
Yeah, well, Janine, thank you so much for giving up your valuable time to talk through your whole game with us on the podcast. For the people who've got it to the end, what's the hashtag? I'm thinking hashtag boost puns because, honestly, they entertained me all season long, and the marketing, that you guys put out was just amazing. So I feel like that kind of sums up what I love so much about what Boost was doing this season.
No, they were awesome. Our social guys are hysterical. So I'm glad you enjoyed them.
They're brilliant. Did you tell them from me? Fantastic job. Where can people find you, Janine, not just Boost Juice, on social media to see what you've got going on in your very busy life?
Yeah, look, I'm fairly active on Instagram. So just, I think, Google Janine Allen, I'll pop up. LinkedIn and Twitter are probably my three social medias that I sort of go to. I think it's Janine Boost. On Twitter, I think it's Janine Alice. I think there might be an underscore somewhere, but I think if you Google me, I'll pop up, and then there's me and my hair and ponytail. And on LinkedIn, again, you can find me pretty easily by just searching for Janine Alice, and I'll pop up.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Janine. For the listeners, Please subscribe to the International Survivor Hap-Ups feed because we are not done. Obviously, the Australian Survivor deep dives continue. Pia and Luke are already out, now Janine, and we have Baden coming soon. So I'm really, really pleased with the group we've got to talk about their very diverse games on the show. And Survivor South Africa, Jacques, Mike, Nicole, and Rob are out. CP and Jeff to come. And then we're talking to the host, Nico, at some point, I think, and Lurubuta, who's a series director. So, so much going on. I hope that you guys do subscribe as well. Please follow me at Shannon Gates for all the question threads, all announcements of the podcast. And a special announcement from me is that I'm going on the voicemails, the feedback show with Rob Cesternino this weekend to talk about US Survivor. So really exciting for me as well. So I hope you guys are following all of that. But Janine, just to thank you once again to, you know, again, to put us into your schedule, to come and give the listeners such great insight into your game as the first ever godmother was just such a delight for me. And I'm sure all our listeners as well.
No worries, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. Thanks to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes as well. Thanks to all of you guys for listening, and we will see you on the next deep dive. Bye.
Thanks a lot. Bye.